Hey, yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. Once again, I am the futurist, Bo, and joined by Chief Defender of the Faith. He's the King of the Casters. His name is Mr. Brett Podcast. And Brett, you know, I say you're the best in the business. And it's not as a host. I mean, let's face it, you're not that good at that. But luckily, I can hear to carry you. But as a booker of guests, nobody is on a roll like you are. And you've done it again today, bringing us one of the very best.
That's right. That's right. We have one of the best bassists in the business. He plays with Symphony X. He also plays with the Ross the Boss Band, and we just had the chance to see him live, which was fantastic. One of the last live, I think the last live show we got to see. And now we have him for his new band, Dead Risen. He is Mike LaPont. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. It's a pleasure to be on, and I'm excited to talk some music. There's so much to talk about these days in my career.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you are a busy guy and awesome. I just want to make sure that everybody understands that you're awesome.
Thank you so much. I do my best.
Well, let's get into the new album with Dead Risen that came out on Friday the 13th, March 13th, and it's a great album. I absolutely love it. And so tell us how it all came about.
Sure. Well, the guitar player Rod Rivera and I, we met sometime around 2007. And at the time, he had a band called Rivera Boma. So it was like his name and the singer, John Boma, and that was the name of the band. And they had a really cool band with a really unique sound. And I liked it a lot, and I did one CD with them. We didn't really play all that much. weren't really on the radar or anything. So then around 2014, the singer, John Boma, you know, he decided he wanted to kind of retire from rock and roll. But Rod Rivera and I, you know, we had such a great relationship on and off the stage that we wanted to continue, and we wanted to form another band. So, you know, over the years, I've known so many musicians. We wanted to get a lot of local guys so we could actually practice and not just have these, you know, emailing parts to each other and stuff like that. We wanted it to sound like a really live band. You know, we wanted a lot of instrumental parts in the songs. We wanted kind of the way Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow used to be, the way they used to just jam in every song. You never knew what they were going to do. So that's what we were looking to do. And then we found some really good local guys, great players, great people. And that was definitely an important prerequisite. We wanted every guy in the band just to be a really good guy. And basically Dead Risen was formed, and it's become a labor of love for everybody in the band.
You know, yeah. So, I mean, obviously you have the new album. We talk about the live sound and rehearsing it. You know, that's interesting because obviously you cannot play live now. I mean, I imagine the plan was then take that sound and let people experience it in person. And, you know, life has changed.
Yeah. The plan was, you know, we wanted to sound live when we recorded the stuff, and we wanted to play live, and we were all excited to finally play live, and then we get hit with this stuff. But you know what, I see it as a minor setback, and actually while this stuff is going on, we're writing more material. So you know, we're making use of the time, and when it's time to start rocking and playing live, you know, we'll do it. No worries.
Yeah, and I think that's how a lot of people are looking at it right now, is just kind of head down to the studio and start working and start crafting all the new stuff. And I'm sure that, in a way, like, that's the positive about this whole experience, is that everybody's going to be able to get really creative and just have some fun in the studio. And I think we're going to find a lot of good music will come out of this, you know, enforced quarantine kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, what is a musician going to do if they can't play gigs and they can't go on tour? They're going to stay home and they're going to work on they're going to work on these songs that have been in their head for a while, you know, that they couldn't really put together yet because of so much touring and other stuff. So I think you're right. I think figure next year we're going to see a lot of releases, a lot of great albums, a lot of great songs. So, yeah, you know, turn the negative into a positive and, you know, let's hunker down and do what we have to do.
For sure. Now, one of the things about this album is that you've got a lot of, you know, just a lot of different sounds going on in there. So was that kind of planned from the start where it was just like, you know, show the versatility of the band?
Yeah, we definitely wanted a band that wasn't stuck in just, you know, we weren't pigeonholed into one style or anything like that. A unique thing about Rod Rivera is when he was growing up, his father was a professional flamenco guitar player. So he had that influence growing up when he was learning guitar. And, you know, then he got into heavy metal and he fell in love with guys like Blackmore and Michael Schenker. So, you know, you put all that influence together and he has a really unique kind of style. So in a lot of our songs, we'll do some flamenco type grooves. And as far as me, I listen to a lot of Celtic Renaissance music, that kind of stuff. So I put that influence also into the songs. So, you know, we get songs that really could go anywhere. And the goal was that every song would have its own kind of feel. And we wouldn't be just, they wouldn't just be heavy metal riff after heavy metal riff. You know, sometimes they would be, but we could branch out if we needed to.
So I'm interested then in the songwriting. How did you guys come together to write all the songs?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because in the different bands that I'm in, they all have different formulas for writing songs. So for Dead Risen, you know, we're all kind of older guys and we all have our own families and our own things going on. So what we would usually do is we rehearse once a week and whoever was available that day to rehearse would come down and whoever wasn't, that was fine. You know, whoever could come down, we would write together and that worked out for us. Usually what would happen is Rod Rivera would come up with a riff or two or a part or something and he would let me and whoever else is there listen to it, and then we would help him develop it, and it would just kind of worked out cool because it was like a real band effort. You know, it just wasn't one guy doing it, you know, so we all put our 2 cents into the music, and I think in the end it's the most rewarding that way, you know, because it feels like a band and it feels like actually like a musical family.
I'm interested then, what kind of things did you maybe learn from recording with Symphony X, recording with Ross the Boss, stuff like that, that you maybe take now towards creating new music?
I think what I learned the most from Symphony X is, well, yeah, I mean, I've learned so much. It's hard to even say, but I learned so much about songwriting from Symphony X, just how to craft a song, how to get from one part of a song to another part, and then bring it back to its original section to tie it all together. And I learned so many tricks and techniques and things about music theory from Michael Romeo and Michael Pinella that I was able to bring that knowledge into Dead Risen. And I, you know, at least I would like to believe that it made the songs that much better. And as far as the recording aspect goes, I guess we basically used the Symphony X model to record the stuff because, you know, working with Symphony X, they just do everything so well. And you know, I'm just blessed to have this great model. So for the recording, we did just like Symphony X does. We put together some good solid demos of all the songs, and then the drummer would record and he would play to those songs with the click track. So then he's done. And then we had Rod Rivera go in and do the rhythm guitar. And then I did the bass and then we did the vocals. So we made it kind of like a cake. I think you get a really precise recording that way. And I actually turned Ross the Boss onto recording that way because he was always, as you guys can imagine, he's just total old school, right? Everybody's in the same room and you just jam, you know? And that's great. And that's how we did record the By Blood Sworn album. But the new Ross the Boss album, I convinced him to do it with the Symphony X model. And at the end of the day, he liked it so much. He said, I'll never go back to the old way. So, you know, hopefully I did a good thing for him.
Yeah, he's an awesome guy, but go ahead, Mo.
Yeah, we've had a chance to talk to him a couple times, including here in Calgary. We sat down before the show and you know, talked to him and then watched you guys go out there and rip it up. Of course, yourself, Rod, are you know, very well known in the music industry. So you have those other guys that are not as well known. If you can kind of give us a little bit more of their background and what they're bringing to the music.
Sure. we'll start with the keyboard player, Tony Stahl. Now, Tony, he's been like on the New York, New Jersey hard rock, heavy metal scene since the early 1980s, you know, unfortunately, never really, I guess, got any big recognition. I guess the most popular band he's ever been in was a band called Live Say, and they were out of upstate New York. And, but always a very competent keyboard player and a great human being. And for me, he was a great choice, you know. And I think he did really, really well on the record, and he added a lot to it. A great thing about Tony is he keeps up with all the latest metal bands and hard rock bands. So he's always in tune to what's going on with orchestration and keyboard stuff. The drummer, his name is Dan Prestup, and he's from the New Jersey area. Now, he's a little bit younger than we are, but what we love about Dan is he's got great chops and he just loves to play. He's not like the rest of us that has been just jaded by music industry. You know, he just loves to play and that's all he wants to do. And he just lights up a room whenever he's in there. You know, he's just good people, great drummer. So it was a pleasure to have him aboard. The singer is Will Shaw. Will Shaw is from the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania area. Again, you know, a relatively unknown guy. But when I heard him sing, I was like, wow, this guy is an amazing singer. Just absolutely incredible. And he just needs a chance to get out there so people could listen to him. So we recruited him. Again, another just great human being and a total pro. So we all got together and, you know, we're really happy. You know, I mean, the band is, we're all close friends on stage, off stage, and we love playing together. And when we get together, we're really proud of the music that we make because it's a real band effort. And also Will Shaw writes all the lyrics to the songs.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I guess that's one of my questions too, is that the idea when you got Will, now were you looking for a specific style of vocalist, or was it just the fact that Will was so amazing that you were just like, well, it doesn't matter what style, he's the guy?
I think we were looking for a vocalist that could be as versatile as we wanted the band to be. We wanted definitely a singer. You know, in my opinion today, there's too many guys that just want to scream and there's not enough singers, you know. So, you know, I just, you know, just out of the blue, I became Facebook friends with Will. And he used to post so many videos of himself doing songs, everything from like the heaviest songs I've ever heard to like Disney songs. And I was like, well, that's the guy we want because this guy is so versatile. And, you know, when he heard the stuff, he loved the stuff. And we were happy to have him aboard. So, you know, he did great, recorded the whole album in just 2 days, wow, which was awesome. And, you know, and the rest is history.
Yeah, because, I mean, recording an album in 2 days, like, that's amazing. So let's talk about live. Now, when you saw him live, what did you, like, does he kind of, you know, command the stage in the way that you want?
Well, I've seen him live in a few different settings. One way I saw him live, he had a Dio tribute band, and I saw them play, and he was, you know, he was fantastic. You know, I mean, now besides, you know, the vocal performance, which, you know, of course was great, he had a really kind of unique kind of front man thing going on. He wasn't the type of guy that was just taking command of the stage, you know, like a Rob Halford, but he had a humor to it, you know, and it was kind of cool. You know, he was really funny on stage, and the crowd would react accordingly, and they would definitely get into the show. And then there was a couple of times where the Dead Risen band played, but it was before Dead Risen was Dead Risen. we played under the Rivera Bowman name before we actually formed Dead Risen. So when we did that, those shows went really, really well too. And again, you know, he had a really kind of humble, humorous kind of feel to his stage presence that went over really, really well.
Because I think, you know, it's always one of the most important elements when you have that live set. And that was one of the great things about the Ross the Boss show, is that Mark Lopes is just so incredible on stage. So I guess it's like, how, like, would you compare them in that regard?
No, actually, I mean, they're totally different. You know, Mark just takes command of the stage, you know, and if you're not into the show, he's going to force you to get into the show. You know what I mean? And, you know, he's a real, really tough presence on stage, you know, real angry kind of feel to it. Where Will, on the other hand, is very humble and kind of humorous, and just makes it like it's a, you know, a fun gathering. Where Mark, when Mark's on the stage, you want to like mosh and go crazy because he's inciting that, you know. So it's two kind of different feels, which is cool, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of the lead singers I work with have their own thing going on, so it's an interesting thing to take notice of.
Yeah, that's cool. Now, one of the things that I noticed too about this album is that it's definitely recorded well, and your bass sound comes out, and it's got a lot of, like, I'll say, bass forward elements. Like, you can tell that you know, you're an important part of it, and so I really like that about it. And so maybe talk to me about just kind of, was that in design as well, just to make sure that you got the bass sound out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think we wanted to come across as a live band, you know. And, you know, if you look back, like, well, let me say what's going on nowadays. I feel that the bass sounds in a lot of the albums that have come out, I'd say in the last 15 years or so, the bass is kind of buried, you know. Mm-hmm. It seems like, you know, the guitar's up, the keyboards are up, You know, the drums are cranking and the bass is kind of thought of more like a frequency than an actual instrument. Now, if you go back to the 70s and the 80s, the bass is more up in the mix. And I think that actually helps to drive a song. So, you know, Rod and the rest of the band were really adamant that they wanted me to be heard. So, and that's fine with me. So, you know, the album was recorded by a guy named Eric Rachel. Now, Eric Rachel, he recorded and mixed the first four Symphony X records. So, you know, we've been working with him just for years and years. He's like a staple of the Jersey recording scene. I think he recorded the first Skid Row album, if my memory serves me correctly. He's a bass player himself. So when he recorded the record, he made sure that the bass frequency and the guitar frequency were not going to be, you know, we're not going to be too commingled with each other. You know, you were going to have some separation there. And, you know, I think that just makes the record all that much better. And it makes it sound more live and not sterile, because I really feel the bass should be heard. I think it really helps to drive a song. And, you know, and it's great. You know, it's great for me because there's a lot of records that I've recorded where it's very hard to hear myself. And, you know, you think you record, well, wow, I just came up with this awesome bass line. And then when it's recorded, you don't even hear it.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I can well imagine. I mean, because, yeah, that's the one thing I noticed about this album is it's just like it's got that great bass on it. And I love being able to hear all the instruments on the recording, because otherwise, why the hell is it there, right?
Theoretically, right? Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we wanted everything to be heard. We wanted the band to kind of have a feel of a late 70s, early 80s hard rock, heavy metal band with modern production.
Now, one of the other. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Bo.
No. It's just, you know, I mean, the ninth track that had a nice bass solo. And why don't we hear more of those? I mean, it's awesome, and it's so rare to actually get a bass solo within a song.
You know, my honest theory on that is, unfortunately, I think a lot of the bass players of the last 15 years or so, 20 years, they're not learning what you're supposed to learn as a bass player. I think too many bass players are just trying to learn either stuff that's just so hard that you'd never even use it in a song, or they just don't learn the language of their instrument anymore. So they just follow what the guitar is doing. And I mean, that's cool if you want to follow what the guitar is doing, but you know, at some point, you know, I mean, the bass is a unique instrument that is very different than a guitar, and it has to be played very differently. So I think a lot of bass players haven't learned that. And I think a lot of other bass players, you know, they just want to learn all like hard, fast licks. And then when it comes to a song, they don't know what to put in the song. So they just play what the guitar is playing.
Because, yeah, I know there's a lot of bass players out there, and when we think of a bass player, I mean, like I go to, say, Billy Sheehan, right? Because, I mean, he can play really fast, really well. But then you've also got the guys that really just cover the back end, and it's more like, you know, handling and being part of the rhythm section. So I feel like you're a little bit more than just part of the rhythm section. Who are those bass players then that you look up to and say like, okay, well, that's a great bass player?
Yeah, you know, my influence really comes, I listen to the bass players of the 1970s, because in the 1970s, the guitar was just kind of strumming something and the bass had to walk the instrument and it had to outline the chord and had to make the song move. So I really studied that a lot. I studied, I grew up as a blues player, and I really learned how to play blues and funky kind of stuff. And so when I hear stuff in heavy metal where that could be done, you know, I go ahead and do it because I think it really works for the song and it makes this gives the song some dynamics. Now, my favorite bass players, when my first influence really actually, maybe a lot of people don't think of him as a great bass player, but he really taught me a lot about blues playing was actually Gene Simmons.
Oh, wow. I had a suspicion you were going to say that name when you said that not a lot of people. Please go ahead.
Yeah, because if you listen to the Kiss songs in the 70s, he's walking the bass all over the place. And what I did, the first thing I did when I started playing was I learned every Kiss song that I could possibly learn. And I really learned how to walk the bass a lot. And then I started listening to Geezer Butler from Black Sabbath. And he had a really heavy blues approach that I just adored. And I absorbed that influence. And then, of course, every bass player is going to say this. Of course, Steve Harris from Iron Maiden. And, you know, with him, he's got like the fastest two-finger technique I've ever heard in my life. And he had such great bass lines and the scales he was using was just totally original. So I took those guys. And then Geddy Lee from Rush was just blew my mind how melodic this guy was. And I just took all those together. And Joey DeMeo from Manowar used a lot of power chords. So all this together, I kind of formed my style. And I put that into the metal style. So I had all these things in my arsenal that I could use, that I could still use. So I could play everything from the Beatles to Slayer if I wanted to. So I'm very lucky that I took the time to learn all that stuff. And my advice to young bass players is just please learn the language of your instrument. All right. I don't care about tapping and playing fast arpeggios. You're going to use that maybe 10 seconds of a song. Learn the language of your instrument and use it in a song.
You know, when we talked to Ross here, he mentioned how you were able to play Joey's stuff with finger picking, and he was amazed by it. You know that was your technique, and that the way you had learned. So, where did you kind of pick that up from?
Yeah, well, that was a challenge because, you know, Joey plays with a pick, and I play with my fingers. So I was trying to come up with the best way to get the best sound. You know. So I was able, sound wise, you know, he just uses a lot of overdrive. So I was able to do that overdrive and a lot of treble. But then it came into the pick stuff. So I had to say to myself, how can I mimic a pick? You know, if I just use my finger technique and try to play fast, it'll be okay, but it's not going to sound like a pick really. So, my years of playing with Rod Rivera and listening to flamenco music, I kind of took a flamenco technique and I brought it to the bass where I would just move my fingers really fast up and down. And it seemed to work. It felt like a pick. So, you know, if I had a video, I would kind of show you my technique, but I just kind of moved my finger front and back really fast, and it sounds like a pick. So I kind of went with that, and Ross seemed to love it, and it's been working so far. And the Manowar fans have been receptive to it. I've gotten just good reviews. I'm very lucky, and so yeah, I guess I pulled it off.
No question about that. Yeah, for sure. One of the things I'm interested in, I guess, you know, from an outsider perspective is looking at like a 4-string bass, 5-string bass and stuff like that. You know, and what do you favor and why?
Well, of course I grew up, you know, learning the 4-string bass and then like in the 1990s, 2000s, you know, bass players start going to the five string and then to the six.
Yep.
And honestly, there's a couple reasons why I never went to a five string or a six string. Number one, I'm lazy. and number two, my guitar player from Symphony X, Michael Romeo, he never went to a seven string guitar. So we just, so I never really needed to go to the five string bass, you know. Now, listening to Joey DeMeo, he had an eight string bass, which is kind of similar to like a 12 string guitar, where you would have the bass string and then right under it, you would have like an octave, I guess like a guitar string. So you would get a full sound with just one pluck. So that I liked. So when I joined Ross's band, I started using that. And then I liked it so much that I began using it for my solo band stuff.
Yeah, because it's such an interesting sound, and I mean, it's so different, the variety of basses. I don't know that most people think about it that much.
Yeah, you know, and I listed some other bass players. There's actually a 12-string bass, too, where you hit one note and you're hitting three strings. Tom Peterson from Cheap Trick uses that. Who else? John Gallagher from Raven uses an 8-string and a 12-string. And the bass player from King's X uses an 8-string and a 12-string. So you get a really, really full sound. Now, you can't play super fast on it, but, you know, for just a full sound, especially if you just got one guitar player in the band, it's great for when the guitar player is going into a lead and you need to hold down the rhythm.
Yeah, can you expound on that a little bit? The whole, like, as a bass player playing with a single guitarist and the difference between playing with a single guitarist versus playing with two guitarists?
Right. When you're playing with, I've done both. You know, I've played with two guitar players. I played with one guitar player. When you're playing with two guitar players, during the guitar solo section, you know, you have the other guitar to hold down the rhythm. So you don't really have to think out of the box at all. You know, you could kind of just, you can kind of just play what you're playing and it'll sound full. So that's kind of easy there. But now when you're playing with one guitar player, usually when the guitar player goes into a guitar solo, you need to do something extra because the sound kind of drops out. So that's where I play a lot of power chords. So I play a lot of power chords with some overdrive on it and a lot of treble, so it cuts through the mix. And it almost sounds like a rhythm guitar and a bass at the same time. So it kind of fills it up a lot. And now if you have a keyboard, you could kind of go both ways. You could play the power chords or you could just play what you're playing. You know, it just depends on what the song needs. But definitely it's a very different thing for a bass player playing with one guitar player as opposed to two. You know, I play with Ross, one guitar player, so I really got to fill it in. With Symphony X, it's one guitar player, but there's a keyboard there, so I don't really have to go crazy kind of filling in the rhythm. So so each band has its own dynamic, and I get to do both at the same time.
And if,
it's interesting. Oh, yeah. Oh, please go ahead,
Brett. I was just going to say, and of course, Dead Risen is the same thing. You have that keyboardist to kind of to fill it in as well.
Right. With Dead Risen, I kind of could go either way, actually. You know, so in some of the songs, I might just lay back and just let the keyboard kind of come out more. But then in other songs, I'll play some power chords along with the keyboard, and it'll make a real full sound behind the guitar solo. So I guess with Dead Risen, I get kind of the best of both worlds, and I could just kind of go whatever I think the song requires.
So I was just thinking back, you know, as I'm listening to you talk about the instrument, thinking back to, I always remember listening to Tom Hamilton say, and he always seemed to get a little annoyed that he and Joey Kramer didn't get enough credit for what they're doing with Aerosmith. And he said, we're the bed that everything else lays on, is how he described it. But it sounds like your philosophy is a little bit different than that.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, I think it depends on the band. You know, yeah, I mean, in Aerosmith, yeah, I mean, him and Joey Kramer were an awesome rhythm section, you know. And I wish they did get more notoriety. I think probably besides Geddy Lee and Neil Peart, my favorite rhythm section, I'd say, was Queensryche.
Mm-hmm.
That rhythm section was so unbelievable and so tight. I really wish they would get more accolades for that. But, you know, it depends what the band needs, you know. I mean, think about if you have a band like AC/DC. That rhythm section is so crucial, you know. It's that pocket. So Angus could do his great riffs over it. You got to have that pocket, like, right there, the timing right on the money. And that makes all the difference. But then, you know, there's other rhythm sections where it's kind of, it's almost like follows a jazz model sometimes, where you just kind of branch off and just kind of jam and just, you know, kind of stay cohesive, you know, as a bass player, you're listening to the drum beat and kind of what the bass drum is doing, but you just kind of do your thing and just kind of do almost your own solo in a way, and then just kind of going back to the drums here and there, you know, so it sounds tight. You know, there's so many different ways you could approach a rhythm section. For Dead Risen, I try to stay tight with the drums for the most part, but there are times where, you know, I just want to walk the bass, and or I'll do something maybe out of the box here and there, but I do try to stick with the drummer for the most part.
Now, one of the songs, of course, on the Dead Risen album is your cover of Metallica's For Whom the Bell Tolls. What brought that one up? And then maybe speak about their rhythm section.
Sure. That's actually a funny story.
Excellent. I love funny stories.
Yeah, we wanted to do a cover on the album, but, you know, of course, you know, everybody has their own idea of what to do. So everybody's saying, well, let's try this. Let's do this. Let's do this. And we're getting nowhere. So Rod was a teacher at a local school of rock over here. And one of his students, you know, wanted to learn for Who the Bell Tolls. So he taught him the song. So he had just learned the song and it was fresh in his mind. So he basically said, hey, you know, I just taught a kid for Whom the Bell Tolls. You want to just do that? And then we were just like, well, I know it. All right. You know it? Yeah, I know it. We all know it. So we just did it. So it was totally off the cuff, totally spontaneous. And what I wanted to do is, you know, put my own flavor into the bass. You know, we had a keyboard, so we had to think of what to do with a keyboard, but we had fun, and it is what it is, and, you know, the fans could be the judge. Now, the Metallica rhythm section, very interesting rhythm section. A lot of people like to put down Lars Ulrich for his drumming. I got to be honest with you, I like his drumming. I think it's very inventive. Especially in the old days, you know, where he was the guy who actually came up with hitting the cymbal crash on the two instead of the one. Sounds like nothing big, but that was like, that had an incredible influence on me. Like when I was writing songs, all of a sudden I was thinking of crashing on the two instead of the one. Of course, you know, Cliff Burton, one of the best heavy metal bass players, you know, definitely in my opinion. And they, Metallica has always had great bass players. All their guys are great. They all deserve to be in that band. And, you know, with Metallica, you just got to be tight with the drums. A lot of it's, you know, just fast. You got to just be kind of tight with the double bass and you're good, you know? So, you know, I mean, and, you know, Trujillo, who they have now, is just ridiculously good. You know, he's he played in some great, great bands, man.
For sure, and, for sure.
Right? Infectious Grooves, where he would do that funk stuff, was just unreal. So, you know, he's fantastic. And you know, all I know is when I go to see Metallica play live, they sound great. So I'll just kind of go with that.
Yeah, they do a good job. They do a good job.
I think those kids got a future.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe they stick to it.
Well, let's talk actually about sticking to it and just, you know, what does it take, especially nowadays, to kind of keep a career in the music industry?
Nowadays is the hardest I've ever seen in my life to make it in the music industry. You know, back in the old days, you know, you had record companies, a lot of big record companies with a lot of money that would go into the clubs and they would find great bands and they would kind of weed out the great bands from, you know, from maybe the not so great bands. And they can make you a rock star. Then there is so much money in it. Nowadays, the record companies are going out of business left and right. And you have the great bands and the not so great bands all trapped in the internet, trying to find a way out, trying to do whatever they can to get out. And really nobody knows how to do it really. And I don't know the answer to that question. And on top of that, you take the streaming sites like Spotify that just basically steal from the bands. I mean, they pay bands for a stream. Like it's something like 0.00012 of a penny for a stream. So the bands are basically not even getting paid. And now they're forced to go on the road if they could afford to go on the road. And now if you could afford to go on the road, you got to compete with all the other bands on the road. And people only have so much money to spend. So bands are getting crushed left and right. I really don't know if it's possible right now to find the next Metallica or the next Judas Priest or the next Ozzy. So I'm really fearful for the future of rock and roll, heavy metal music.
Yeah, I can see that. And see, this brings up a couple of things for me, because like, I know one thing that's great about Ross the Boss is that he's always been able, from what I can see, to get tours that kind of last for a little while, because there's a lot of guys that are out there who aren't able to hit a lot of these spots. I mean, like I said, we saw you in Calgary, and there's a lot of bands that don't even come through Calgary, but Ross the Boss has come through. And so I think that's something really impressive to be able to pull that off.
Yes. Ross is a rock and roll warrior, and nothing is going to stop him. He's got more energy than I could ever dream of having. And he's just a machine. Now, I will say also, he was lucky enough to come on the music scene before all this stuff with Spotify and all this other stuff. So he's got the fan base, and there's a lot of people that want to hear those first six Manowar records, and Ross is actually very much loved in the industry. So they want to see him play because he plays well. they want to talk to him at the shows because he's so friendly and so personable, and they want to hear those Manowar songs. So I think personally he's got this cult following that I don't think they're going to go away. So you know, it's an awesome thing. The problem is, if you're a very new band, how do you get through? Like, how do you get to a level where people are coming out to see you if the record companies won't even support you and you're trying to do it all yourself and self-finance and having GoFundMes to try to finance a tour, whatever you got to do, it's really, really hard. And I feel bad for the newer bands.
It's actually interesting. Sorry, Brett, but, you know, here in when we saw you play, it wasn't the biggest crowd. It was
right.
Very enthusiastic.
Mm-hmm.
you know, the crowd was absolutely into it, but it wasn't as big as you know, we had wished to have seen.
Right.
But one of the things that we saw Ross do was he came out, you know, when one of the opening bands was playing and you know, he watched them and you know, he's talking and he just starts screaming about how great they are and I don't know, something about that was really it was uplifting to see that he had that kind of dedication to the new bands in the industry and wanted to talk to them afterwards and give them some advice or some, you know, inspiration.
Yeah. What's great about Ross is he's real. And it's so refreshing, you know, to meet someone who's just real and really believes in what they're doing. You know, he's true blue from top to bottom. That I could tell you, I've known Ross I've known Ross since 2006, and he's just true blue. He is the hardest working guy you're ever going to find in the industry, and he's go, go, go. Any setbacks go right over his head. He doesn't even care. He just pushes on. He's just one of those guys, and I think that really shows through on stage, and it shows through after the show when you're talking to him or if the media is talking to him. So, yeah, I totally understand what you're saying.
So the one question that I was going to ask then is, now, right now, being in the middle of the pandemic as we are, now, I know that with bands having to go off tour, how big a hit financially is that to a band?
Oh, bands are getting crushed. I mean, I could tell you for me, my personal situation, and check this out. So I just moved into a new home literally 2 weeks ago. And, you know, about 2-3 weeks ago. And I'm like, I'm not worried because, you know, in April I got a full Ross tour. And then right after that, I got a Symphony X tour. And then boom, this thing hits. Ross tour is now postponed till God knows when. Symphony X, it's not official yet, but it's supposed to be in May. I would be surprised if it happens, to be honest with you. So now, for me, I've just got two tours that it looks really bad. Just you know, moved into a new home. And financially, I'm crushed. And I think a lot of bands are feeling the same exact pressure because bands are now not making money from album sales. They're making money from going out on the road and selling their merchandise. So now they can't even do that. You know, a lot of bands don't know what to do. You know, maybe they're trying to, some bands are streaming shows with no people there. You know, and you know, whatever, you could donate. The one thing I don't like, though, is there are some bands out there that their tours are being postponed, and what they're doing is they're starting GoFundMe things, and you know, so it's like it's almost like they're going to get money because the fans love them, but then they're going to get money and then they're going to go out on tour eventually and make more money. And I think that's really, it's really in bad taste, you know, because, you know, everybody's struggling right now, you know, and it's like, you know what, if you're hurting for money, you know, go work at, wherever you can find work, you know, don't ask your fans who love you and they'll do anything for you, but, you know, because you're going to get that money eventually when you go out on tour. So here you're soaking the fans twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an interesting way to think of it.
Yeah, it really is. Cause I know that the, and for us, I mean, like we are totally happy to talk to anyone who wants to come on the show, because I mean, we want to promote your music. We want to be able to help you sell merchandise. And I mean, if there's a link that we can put on directly to merchandise, you know, for the band, then let's do that. Because I mean, sure, you can't sell it live, but maybe you can sell some extra over the internet. And I think that's at least, it's not disingenuous in that regard, because right. that's what you want to do.
Sure. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think that would be the right way to go. Okay, guys, I actually got to run.
Yeah,
I got another interview in just a few minutes. So but I wanted to say thank you for the really great and intelligent questions. And I really appreciate the thought you guys put into this interview. And I hope we could do this again sometime.
Absolutely. Me too. Wonderful interview. If you have just a few seconds to tell everybody where to find Dead Risen.
Sure. Dead Risen, you know, we're all over social media, the normal places. Just search us on Instagram and Facebook, and you'll be able to find us and what we're doing. And feel free to write to us. You could find the record pretty much anywhere too. Wherever you normally buy records or CDs or whatever, it will be there. And we appreciate all the support. Thank you very much.
Well, Dead Risen is a fantastic band. Mike LaPond, you're a fantastic bassist, wonderful guest. Wish you all the best in the future and look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you guys very much, and stay safe.
You too.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care, guys. Take care now.
Bye now.
Go on to that other interview that won't be as good. Go ahead. Bye. Have a good night.